Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Within football, we have silos.
We talk about hiring the man first, the coach second. I think he is an unbelievable person.
Every single person in this locker room right now is playing professional football.
Aaron get COVID, and the week they're like, yeah, you starting. And I'm like, okay, let's do it.
Looking back to Green Bay, I made a lot of long-lasting relationships there. You know, I got nothing but love for the city.
What's up, guys? This is Jeff Giannis. Packers Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Brian's Packers Podcast, from one Packers Podcast in the state of our minds. I am Spencer, joined this week with Billy and Todd. Boys,
hello.
Greetings, gentlemen.
And training camp continues. No real football, but some football. The Packers losing 32-10 to the New York Jets at Lambeau Field. It was a game.
It's a slog.
It's a good way to put it. Starting offense only having the one possession. I think the starting defense only had one or two possessions, but a ugly game. If you actually feel bad about the team after that, and I mean it wasn't fun watching, I completely forgot about preseason last year when we lost 2-27, 2-30-something to the Broncos. And I can't believe that was only a year ago, and we already, like most fans, I feel like that's completely out of our brains, and we're just like, oh man, this year sucks. It's like, well, actually, I don't think the scores of the preseason games really matter all that much.
I mean, looking back, it feels like the Packers just always have some no-show in the preseason where it's just
worst
a terrible
time.
Showing. Everybody panics, and you're right, we forget about it come regular season.
But the drops were a little...
Well, the penalties.
Yeah, those refs were being pretty... Like, Jacob Monk...
Yeah, some of it was the refs.
Yeah, we'll get into, you know, guys who played well. This episode, we're going to talk about, you know, the fucking injuries. Oh my God, Jordan Love's thumb on his non-throwing hand. The season is over. We're going to do stock up, stock down, players whose stocks are rising and falling. We'll talk a little bit of, you know, the zombie, he's back. I'm sure everyone thought we'd never, ever talk about him, but we're going to talk about Mark Murphy a little bit because, hey, he found a new job in Green Bay. Very interesting. There's definitely no fishy, funny business going on with that. And then probably talk about the NFC North a little bit and some other training camp garbage. I don't know. Still, I guess we can wrap up this game. And again, it was one possession on offense. I wonder if they were going to play a little bit more of I almost said Rodgers, if Jordan Love didn't hurt his
thumb.
Wasn't
it two?
No, I think...
It was two.
Sorry, it was two.
Yeah. They went three and out.
Yeah, three and out.
Drove a little.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, first downs.
Is that when he hurt his thumb? I didn't realize it was in the game. I thought it was in practice.
It was that last play when he was kind of scrambling, and then it looked like he was going to run, and then he stopped himself. Yeah, it was... And then he practiced... The next time they had it, and then he had a wrap around his left thumb, talked to like Goody and LaFleur and the trainers after practice, and then he got surgery the next day, which
that's
I forgot who said this, but apparently it's the same surgery that Drew Brees had back in the day on his throwing hand, which he was out 5 weeks for. Again, this is Jordan Love's non-throwing hand, so if anything, we might just start the year off a little bit more in shotgun, and he won't be taking snaps under center. But either way, not great. I guess before we get into the... I don't know. I don't even... How do I host? How does one host a podcast? We'll just rip through the other injuries right now. Obviously, Christian Watson's still out with the knee injury. Goody made it sound like he will be on PUP, which I think everyone has kind of assumed so far this offseason. Jaden Reed was seen in a boot before the game. That is his foot. or his toe, I believe, is his. Yeah, I think it's a toe injury. Dontayvion Wicks has been out for a week or two with a calf, which is all the rage nowadays, because if you pay attention to basketball and the NBA, these players get calf injuries and they sit out, and sometimes when they come back a little too early, they blow out their Achilles, which has also been hot in the streets the last few years, so I'm sure they're being pretty cautious with that. Nate Hobbs is still out with his knee scope. I don't remember if this, if we talked about this. This might have happened like the day after we recorded last, but he did have a little knee scope deal going on. I guess it's similar to what J.J. McCarthy's injury was last year that kept him out all year. Like, there's two different ways to repair it. You can either full-on repair the MCL, whatever the fuck it is, that
meniscus?
Meniscus, or you can, like, trim it. And I believe they trimmed it. So hopefully, I mean, I don't really know how that works, but hopefully that holds up. But again, it's a little tough to go into week one against the Lions and your number one, number two corner is going to be a little hobbled by a knee. Todd, do you have something?
What are the odds that he was born with extra meniscus and we can just trim some off and he'll be fine?
Yeah,
I mean, trim, like, take it, like, when I put something back together, like a mechanical thing, and I have extra parts, that's normal. Yeah, but when you go into someone's body and you're like, you don't need this, and then you just pull some out, it's like, well,
let's just put it on a jar on the shelf in the training room for later in case somebody else needs it.
We could pickle it.
There you go.
I do. I almost feel like this is a little bit of karma after Jair, after during the first week of practice where he had to get his knee drained, and a bunch of Packer fans were like, see, this is why we move on for him. He practiced like the next day, and then Nate Hobbs, who has also had injury concerns, is, you know, sitting out right now.
Does it seem like LaFleur's go-to answer on all of these injuries, I mean, other than Watson, is, yeah, we hope they'll be ready for week one, which... Of course you do, but I mean, if Nate Hobbs got part of his meniscus cut off and taken out of his knee, I don't see any way that the dude is ready for week one.
It was extra.
Yeah, it was all just extra stuff again, so he'll be good to go.
That just feels very invasive for a 3-week injury.
Yeah, that's what's always funny is like, because you know, you see yourself and it's like, oh, if a normal human gets an injury, like, you're out of work for a couple weeks, and these guys, it's like, nah, like Jordan Love, it's like, oh, he'll be back practicing next week, is what Goody was saying when he has That's surgery fair. On his hand. Xavier McKinney, he's got a calf injury too. He said he should be good to go week one. Zane Anderson had a knee. I think that was during the game. He was slow getting up, but it sounds like that's not long term. The other guys to kind of talk about, well, Romeo Doubs went down today or yesterday, and Luke Musgrave, too. It sounds like those aren't long-term. And then the two rookies, like Isaiah Dunn, he's hurt. He's a knee, but nobody knows who the hell that is anyways. Undrafted corner. But Colin Oliver and John Williams, two draft picks. Colin Oliver, who we've talked about, that fifth-round pick, the outside linebacker, defensive end, or whatever, the pass rush specialist. He has been out. He was healthy for OTAs and hasn't practiced since. And it sounds like he hasn't really moved up in the rehab group either, which isn't very good. Same deal with John Williams, the seventh round offensive tackle, with his back injury. He hasn't practiced all of training camp. Both of those guys are on the PUP. So, you know, rookies, not a huge deal, but now it's getting to the point where if they aren't practicing here in the next week or two, one, you have to wonder how quick it's going to take them to get up to speed. Not so much John Williams, but Colin Oliver, who I think had a chance to contribute this year. Or if it's something where if it keeps bleeding into it, like, they're going to have to put them on the PUP to start the year. And then after that, if they're still not good, or you don't feel good about putting them on the 53, putting them on the IR, just losing them for the full rookie season would be less than ideal. But those are all the injuries. I don't know about you guys. I'm not overly worried. I feel like right now it's not doom and gloom, but people are, I don't know, obviously not thrilled with the amount of injuries we have right now. But I feel like going into that Lions game, there's going to be like a report that first practice that pretty much everyone on the 53, no one who's actually important, won't be practicing going into that game.
I feel like right now it doesn't matter. We're so early in the preseason. It makes a lot of sense to just, like, if you have anything, you go on the injury report, you sit. Like, we're at that stage in the year. I don't know. Remind me, does the floor he doesn't play starters the week before the season, right?
It's varied.
He hasn't.
It's varied. You're talking the last preseason game because there's like a 2 week.
Yeah, sorry.
Yes. It. What he said is obviously they played in the first game. Doesn't sound like starters are going to play in Indy. They're going to have joint practices on Thursday and Friday, I think. So they're going to try to get all the reps in there. And then I believe he said the last preseason game he's anticipating starters playing in that one. So I don't know, a little goofy, kind of flip flopping.
I was just thinking, like, it really doesn't matter at this point anyway. If all these injuries could be absolute nothing. I mean, obviously, maybe the Hobbs one is, like, the worst one. I don't know. That feels like the worst one of guys who are going to contribute right away. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But all these other ones don't seem, like, the non-throwing arm or non-throwing hand of Jordan Love, like, that doesn't really seem that bad. I don't know.
But how many times have we seen somebody get hurt and we think it's minor? I mean, Jordan Love was dealing with an injury all of last year after, you know, he got hurt on the last, second to last play, whatever it was, in the opener in Brazil. Oh, it's only 2 weeks, he'll be back. He comes back and he just never really looked quite right all year. Like, didn't quite play to the standard we had. Kenny Clark hurt his toe or foot or whatever in the opener, and I don't ever remember talking about it, but I mean, based on everything people have said after the fact, and then what I saw in the preseason game from Kenny, it's like, yeah, maybe that toe was affecting his play. So obviously I don't feel great about having these injuries, but I struggle to believe that all of them are as minor as LaFleur is letting on. And my fear is that they're just going to linger and, you know, you start playing games that matter, and sure, it's one of those deals where if it was a game tomorrow, he'd be playing, sure, but how effective is he?
Yeah, we'll see. Again, I'm not too worried. You did get me thinking there, though, Billy, because I would disagree with the Jordan Love thing just because, you know, when it happened, we were like, oh, shit, he might be gone for the season. And it was still like initially he should be out like 4 weeks, and he was out 2 weeks. And then he kept, you know, he re-aggravated it, hurt his groin, whatever. But I like what you said about Kenny Clark, because it is like, if it's your toes or fingers or thumb, then it gets overlooked a little bit more, because you have Kenny Clark. And I guess that was something that was a little bit more under the radar, but we didn't know much about it last year. We just thought Kenny was a playing well. We'll see how he plays this year. But then even Rodgers, with his last year in 2022 with the Packers, his thumb injury, which happened at the last, with the last snap against the Giants in London. And that hampered him the rest of the year. I mean, he broke his fucking thumb and nobody really talked about it. And that was another thing that lingered all year. So maybe that's what we have to focus on more. So it's the little bones in the body.
Your comment, though, about Love with his thumb and whether or not we need to go out of the shotgun, I think, is appropriate. But the other thing I think we're overlooking is him handing off the ball, because when he hands off to his right, he uses his left hand. And I saw the report from practice on, was it Monday this week, that with his thumb wrapped up on his left hand, he was using his right hand, like holding his hand kind of thumb down to hand off the ball. So it makes me wonder if that's going to have some effect on the play calling, or maybe we do line up in the shotgun and he hands off with both hands more frequently. Cause I don't know that I trust him handing off in an awkward position like that.
Yeah,
then you've got running backs that aren't used to taking it that way.
I don't think he'd actually do that in regular. I feel like that was just getting through that practice. Like, he started to see if he could actually, you know, go through practice with that thumb and thinking maybe he could just work through it. And then they're like, no, let's get this cleaned up while we can and move on to the regular season.
Feels like if it's that bad, it's just a little toss. Just a little toss to the running back.
Yeah.
Instead of
everything
backwards handoff.
Everything turns into a toss. With that, moving on, stock up, stock down, pretty clear here. Stock up players during training camp, or positions who are rising, or, you know, we feel positive about, and then stock down will be the bad ones, the ones who are shitty. And of course, you know, being a Packer fan, I ended up having more stock up even after that shitty game. One guy who I'll lead off with, I don't have these notes in any particular order, John Fitzpatrick. He's a guy who we've kind of talked about a little bit. If you remember last year, he kind of usurped Ben Sims as the third or second tight end when Musgrave came back. He is a, if you don't remember, came from Georgia, 6'7", so another just huge dude. One of four players that tall on the team, too. I looked it up. It's him and two other tackles and somebody else who's 6'7". He's an inch taller than Luke Musgrave, I believe. But he started catching the ball, which is something that he didn't do much at Georgia behind Brock Bowers and Darnell Washington. He only caught 17 balls in 4 years in college. He has two in the NFL in 18 games. He's played with us, and he was drafted by the Falcons in the 6th or 7th round, I believe. But he only played 17 snaps for the Falcons and then went to IR, and then they cut him last year. But just very interesting. His name's been popping up more and more. I don't remember if he had a catch in this game, but he did. Okay. So it's just been a little bit more. And now during training camp, you know, a guy who didn't have a name, who we didn't hear about much at all before this or at the beginning of camp, it's popping up a little bit more. It's to the point now where he almost seems like a roster lock, because initially he was brought onto this team to be the blocking tight end, kind of that 6th offensive lineman. And now the fact that they're actually using him to run out and catch passes, I don't know. I just feel like we'll be seeing a little bit more of him after not thinking much of him at all.
Yeah, he and Ben Sims both had one reception for 17 yards each.
Ooh, amazing. There you go.
And also Johnny Lumpkin, another tight end, had a catch, and Luke Musgrave. So is the Packers offense tight end centric?
I mean, LaFleur in the offseason said that he wanted to go with two tight end looks. So it would make sense that
I've been promised double tight before.
That's fair.
Fool me once.
I mean, I also saw Musgrave get a target deep down the field in the game that I thought he had a chance at if he had kept running, but maybe I'm wrong. But you know, that's what we drafted Musgrave to be, was that seam stretcher. And to see it actually come to fruition a little bit with a target and have a chance at it in a preseason game, I get it's only one play, but I mean, if he's healthy, then there is an opportunity to play more of those two tight end sets. So in my dumb brain, it would make sense. If you're playing a lot of two tight end sets, you want to have more than one backup tight end on the bench.
So you're saying stock up.
I'm saying stock up. Absolutely. I mean, as much as it pains me to say that, I agree with Spencer. I think we're going to keep four tight ends.
Well, I think it's only going to be three. Well, I guess, we'll talk about it later with someone else.
You think chopping block Ben Sims?
Yeah, I think Ben Sims is going to be cut. Yeah, I do.
Isn't Sims a special teamer?
Yeah, but Fitzpatrick is as well. And it's like there's enough fucking special team players out there. I don't know. We'll see either way. I mean, this will probably age poorly, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of instances this year. We see how often Matt LaFleur changes the offense week in and week out. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's weeks where Fitzpatrick outsnaps Luke Musgrave just because of his blocking ability and Musgrave not having much of one of those. Next group that we're going to talk about, probably could have just led with this, but I just have the edge room listed. Baron Sorrell, the rookie, he had a couple nice looks. I didn't forget about him. I kept thinking of him as more of a heavy guy, but seeing him wearing that 99 out at edge, he just looks like a defensive end for this defense. Like, I'm sure you guys saw a couple of those snaps. He had, I think, two QB hits. I know he had multiple pressures. But very cool, very cool. Brenton Cox, he had a couple nice plays as well. JJ Anagbari finally showed up. But obviously the guy who's top five for names for training camp, LVN. It hasn't so much been Rashawn Gary, who's always the training camp all-star. But just about every single practice now, LVN has some type of sack or some big play where he beats one of the tackles, which is great. I talked about it last week, how I feel like there are guys who are just kind of variables on this team, and LVN's kind of the biggest one where, you know, after last year, we didn't have very high expectations at all with him, even with being, you know, the 14th overall pick, but he was just kind of a dud Dean Lowry just a guy out there. If he turns into, you know, a good player, an above average player, finds some type of pass rush. There was one clip going online where he like does a Hezzy Hay on Rashid Walker where he pretends like he's going to spin and then he just runs around him and has the pressure on the quarterback. If we get to a point where we have Rashawn Gary, who's a solid player, I think we'd all agree with that. And then LVN is also a solid player. And then we have the guys like the rookie Baron Sorrell, who, you know, potential there, but Brenton Cox, who's just a pass rusher for the most part. JJ, who's been a pretty solid guy there too. And then Edrin Cooper as well.
Who, Colin Oliver.
Colin Oliver. We don't know anything about him. But these great teams that we see, and obviously in 2010 when we won the Super Bowl, it's like you always have a rotation of good pass rushers. And if you just have that one starter who elevates his game a bit and everyone else rises a little bit too, I don't know. I'm getting a little bit excited. I feel like I said the same thing last year as well. But I don't know. I feel it's nice to have something. If LVN was going through this training camp and we weren't hearing about it, it would be really bad right now, especially with this being year three. So I'm glad. I'm looking forward, and let's see if he lets us down like Rashawn Gary usually does once the season starts.
What would it take from LVN this year for you to look back at the end of the year and say he had a really good year? He took a step forward. He surprised a lot of people.
I mean, I'd be fine with 8 sacks, but I wouldn't be surprised if he came out with like 10. I mean, we still got to remember Kyle Fackrell had a year where he led this team in sacks. You know, the other thing that I had written down, so I went through it because with Baron Sorrell and if he can do anything this year as a rookie. So the last time looking at high sacks as rookies, LVN and Carl Brooks, their rookie year a couple years ago, they both had 4 sacks. That was the highest since 2012. Guess which rookie, you won't be able to, but guess which rookie in 2012 had 4 sacks. So it was, you know, over 10 years since a rookie had 4 sacks.
Mike Neal.
Desmond Moses. Ooh. Remember Desmond Moses?
He was undrafted, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was like a nobody. He just stuck on the team a couple years. Clay, his rookie year, he had 10 or 12. But other than that, it's literally only been 3 guys getting 4 sacks since Clay Matthews in 2009 when he was a rookie. So, I mean, is it bold to say Baron Sorrell is going to crush that 4-sack record that we've had over the last 15 years?
Follow in the footsteps of Desmond Moses. Yeah. I like it.
Follow Moses. Yes.
I just remember Desmond Moses because it seemed like he was the next in the long line of random outside linebackers that flashed during camp and made the team. Vic Saoto, and there was Moses, and then there was one other guy, Andy Malumba.
Yep, Andy Malumba. That was one of Roger's favorite guys on the team. Think of Jayron Elliott too, but was he an edge?
He was kind of out. He was outside linebacker. We played 3-4 then. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah.
He was bigger, right? But yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Frank Zombo. He was a draft pick, wasn't he?
He might have been undrafted too.
That was also the time.
Did he have the hurdle? Didn't Frank Zombo have the hurdle that was over the running back?
We talked about this.
Do we always talk about this?
This is probably the third time it's came up. That was Brandon Chiller.
Okay.
Who jumped over the fullback or someone and then chased down Matt Forte, I think. It was something like that.
Is that what it was?
And then I was also going to mention Eric Walden, who we picked up on waivers, but he was a staple of those early 2010 Green Bay Packers. As we've, Todd, as we've said a million times on here too, he's still spinning, looking around for...
I was literally thinking him looking for Colin Kaepernick, have no idea. It's ingrained in my brain.
Someone else to talk about who's played pretty well, you know, adjacent to that, Colby Wooden. He's a guy who I kind of wrote off. I've never thought much of him. I think it was a healthy scratch in Brazil last year to start the season, but he's put on weight. He looks better. I believe he had a couple tackle for losses in this game, or at least one of them. they had that cool little thing where he graduated. He went back to school and graduated. And apparently, the Packers held their own graduation ceremony for him, and I think they even had like the president of whatever college he's from, Auburn, come down. Is it Auburn? I think it's a dark jersey.
Auburn, yep.
Okay, come down and like be there for it. So I thought that was pretty
cool. They had his mom there for it.
Yeah, I guess that's more expected. But yes, his mom was there as well. But I don't know. It's training camp talk. There's a couple guys out there too on the defensive line. I mean, we can talk about Stackhouse as well, and the sixth round pick Brinson. Those guys have showed up a bit. I mean, the highlight for the defense was that fourth down stop with Stackhouse leading the way. That was, if, at least we had a couple positives that we could look at at that Jets game.
I thought overall, though, man, that the run defense was like so passive. And I'm wondering if that's just like no pressure. Like, there's so much pressure that, or simulated pressure as well, that we like to do in this defense. So like, I don't know. Like, part of me is like, is Kenny washed? Like, I'm a little bit like worried about Kenny.
I mean, Kenny, how long was he out there for?
I just have worried that all last year. I know he's hurt, but like, I don't know.
I saw after the game, beat writers and people that actually generally know what they're talking about, more so than us, I'll say.
Yeah,
and thought especially that Kenny Todd, looked explosive during the game. So
yeah, Todd.
Just for what it's worth, but well, again, in the whole six plays that he had in that first drive or whatever,
People are wondering, is he?
He's only 29.
That is wild. But there's a lot of miles on those tires.
Is he actually 29?
Yes. They talked about it in the preseason game.
Because I've joked that, oh my God, he's turning 22 like for 5 years. To hear that he's actually not in his 30s. Yeah, that's right.
He was
right.
Actually 17 when he got drafted.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
I don't know how they did that legally. Moving on, the another positive, which, again, it's like one of those things with like Twitter in general or social media where it's like, oh, the highs and lows. But the new tackles, newish tackles, I should say, Jordan Morgan and Anthony Belton both played pretty well. Belton had, I mean, he had like the pancake of the one dude right up the middle on that long run. That was pretty cool. He played 44 snaps in the game, didn't give up a single pressure. He also had the second highest run blocking grade for the team on the day. Nice to see him. First time seeing him out on the field. And again, like he was kind of advertised as just a massive dude out there who can run guys over. And then Jordan Morgan, I mean, he didn't give up a sack or pressure in his 23 pass blocking snaps. He's looked pretty good, and he's been using this time with Rashid Walker also being out. He's back to doing individuals. I don't think he practiced with the team today, but he is back practicing again. But Jordan Morgan, a guy who I think most of us saw the clip of him at family night where LVN just made him look terrible. It looked like Jordan Morgan wasn't even trying on that rep. And people are like, oh man, maybe we have to move him back to guard. Maybe he doesn't have it. I've always said, oh, he has it. And then now this preseason game, people are like, oh, we should trade Rashid Walker because he looks so good. So it's like in the span of a week with, what, 30 snaps, fans have completely changed their opinion on this guy. So either way, it's nice that the investments the last 2 years at the tackle position have – the arrow is pointing up a little bit when we didn't have much of that, you know, since Morgan was drafted.
Are we thinking then maybe that LVN is him? Right, like he's making all pros in, he's making Rashid Walker
training
and
camp
Jordan
all pro
Morgan training camp all pros look silly.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
I'm just gonna say LVN could have 3 sacks in the opener, and I still wouldn't think he's turned the corner.
Okay, well that's dumb. That's really dumb. That's a dumb
really
thing to say.
I just really need to see a lot. Also, I've been a long and well known LVN hater, so. I have a lot of baggage there with that pick. I'll just say that.
I liked LVN. I would like to see just like I said, I think last week, it's like any moves. Give me any moves.
You saw it. You saw it on Twitter. It was the fake move. Nope. The fake shimmy.
Not
He's pulled out a spin move too, apparently, during practice.
Okay.
I'm glad we're...
Did he fool anybody with that spin move?
Yes. Yes.
Once. Fool me once. Oh shit. He can spin. All right.
All right. Well, I'm glad talking about the tackles led us back to talking about LVN.
For the tackles, it just gives me more confidence in the depth coming off the bench. If Zach Tom has to miss the second half of a game due to an injury or whatever, like, I wouldn't feel terrible about Belton coming in. I mean, I just think about that playoff game in Philly where Andre Dillard came in and was just a mess, and then we took him out and put in
Telford,
and he was somehow even worse.
Yeah, and I think the big thing here is how is this gonna work itself out, because Rashid Walker is gonna, you know, he's gonna be taking these team reps again, and if Jordan Morgan keeps playing very well, are they gonna want to go with the young guy they drafted in the first round and they want to see him improve throughout the season, or are they going to go with Rashid Walker, who's been steady and, you know, potentially moving out that development for Morgan? And then it's like, again, what do you do with Rashid Walker if you just bench him all year? Like, what is that going to do?
Watch him make him split reps. Jordan Morgan and Rashid Walker.
I forgot about that. Yes. If I had to bet right now, they will split reps because Matt LaFleur is the greatest high school coach of all time and he can't make anyone overly sad about anything. And sticking with offensive line too, that first drive, I loved seeing Zach Tom get that personal foul penalty where he was like late pushing the guys. And then all those fat fuckers came to help him and like push the Jets guys around. It's like, that's the shit that we usually don't see with this team and what we don't see with Zach Tom. I think he maybe last year, it happens about once a year where he gets pissed off at people, but you see his interviews or you hear him talk. He is the most boring human on this planet. So to see him show emotion like that and everyone else get involved, especially like, I think Aaron Banks got in there and he knew Elton was like looking for it because he always wants to get scrappy. So that was like my favorite part for the offensive line during the night.
And that was the first drive, wasn't it?
I believe.
Like that, God, the second.
It was only three snaps.
I was going to say, like, for that to happen on the second play of the game.
Yeah, I think
maybe
you're right.
It wasn't, but even still, even if he played six snaps, it's like he got worked into that much of a lather in six snaps to go hunting after the play.
Wasn't it Elton that got into it with Aaron Donald a couple times?
Yes.
Okay.
Once for sure, yeah, because people still say like Aaron Donald owns, Elton Jenkins owns Aaron Donald. It's like, okay. Yeah. And he retired. He retired because of it. So it just makes sense.
Yeah.
Next stock up that I have is the healthy running backs. I guess I wrote this before Marshawn Lloyd came back, but I threw him in here as well. We'll get to it. But Amar Johnson, he had the 39-yard touchdown. Kevin Harlan, I couldn't believe this. I had to look it up. Kevin Harlan on the call said it was the longest touchdown run in over a season. And he was right. The longest touchdown run last year was 38 yards from Josh Jacobs. I looked it up. That 38-yard run he had last year was the longest touchdown run since 2021. Wilson had a 31-yarder in 2023, and then Aaron Jones had a 20-yarder in 2022. In 2021, I think Aaron Jones had like a 70-yard touchdown run. But since then, like over the last 4 years, that 38-yard touchdown run was the longest one we've had, which is just surprising, especially with Aaron Jones. Most of the time, I guess a lot of his plays have came on those like little swing out passes and shit, but I guess a lot of them he has long runs, but he's not scoring.
Right. Longest runs, you're saying scoring runs, because he always gets caught.
Right.
He always got caught in the open field.
Right, but either way, it was very surprising to hear that like 39 yards was the longest one.
Because I feel like he busted a bunch of them last year. But I guess, the one I'm thinking of too, he got tackled at the one.
Exactly, yes. There was a couple times.
Like seven tackles.
And he had a couple of those passes too where he just running outside and trucking people over. Those were some of his longer plays. Israel Mbarakata, we'll go with. He was the kick returner in this game, which was surprising to Tom Silverstein. Tom Silverstein talked him up a little bit too, saying that he's competing. It seems like these two guys are kind of competing for a spot on this roster potentially, or at least on the practice squad. Maybe it's a little closer than we think right now with all those other guys. But he was saying how he's not exactly like your typical undrafted. We're not too familiar with this guy. We signed him a week or two ago. But this is like his second or third or fourth year in the league. Like, he's a bit of a veteran, and he was with the Niners before this. He's the guy that a lot of guys at training camp have been talking up before Amar Johnson had that nice run against the Jets. So I'm curious to see if we see more out of him in these next couple of games, and maybe he's the one who really pushes to, potentially be a fourth running back on this team. And it's funny, too, because the Niners have had so many injuries where they probably would have kept him had they known that, because Garendo went down, a couple of their other running backs went down. Christian McCaffrey somehow is like the healthy back with that team. So I don't know, just another guy who's shown out a bit. And then, I don't know. Do you guys have anything to say about the new running backs there?
I like Israel Abanaconda.
I just like, with everything going on in the world right now, that statement was just, I like Israel.
It wasn't political. It was about the running back.
I know.
But I think I said this to you during the game. He's like a bit of a slasher. I just like, he doesn't have to be good for me to like him. I just like slashers. They're just fun to watch.
It's my dumb brain, but his first carry, I was like, ooh, that looked a little Aaron Jonesy. Like, he has that body type kind of like him. He only had a handful of carries, but that was my first thought.
I believe I specifically called out Amar Johnson as having a chance to make the practice squad during the post-draft, undrafted free agent podcast. Bold. Look it up. So I'm still on that hype train. I think it's interesting, though, that, you know, if you had asked me at the beginning of camp, realistically, I thought that, you know, between Chris Brooks and Emmanuel Wilson, whoever didn't make the 53, we just bring back to the practice squad. And now it seems like it's tracking maybe towards Johnson or Abanaconda to make the practice squad, and we just cut bait with Wilson or Brooks.
But doesn't it feel like Brooks is safe? He's the only guy on this roster that's a proven blocker. Like, he's the third down guy.
It sure seems that way, especially with Wilson hurt.
And in that second series, I believe it was all Brooks with the starters.
Yep.
I believe so, yeah. They're being safe with
it. He feels safe.
Yeah. Yeah, and Andy Herman has said that he is making the team. I don't trust Andy Herman, but I don't know. I just thought that was interesting because he's at training camp, and it seems like he's always running with it. He's one of those guys, Chris Brooks. I see him almost like Mercedes Lewis, where he's a guy that the coaching staff loves, and if it were up to them, he would be on the team. But that doesn't mean Goody's going to pick him. Right. The other thing I want to throw out there, too, and I guess, sorry, with Chris Brooks, when we were talking about the tight ends keeping three or four, Chris Brooks, I think Ryan Wood said this, that we should almost view him as a fullback because he's not a great runner. He's just out there when we have like the two back personnel for the most part, or, you know, kind of like John Kuhn back in the day, where he's just a really good pass protector. That's his main thing. And then, you know, he isn't bad at anything, but he's really, really good at pass protection. And then he's okay at running the ball and catching the ball. So that's kind of been, you know, maybe he fills in that fourth tight end spot by kind of being that H back fullback type.
He also seems like he must be fairly smart and have yes. a good grasp on the playbook, because he was the 2-minute guy last year too.
Yep. Yep. Which was weird because Wilson had been that guy.
Yeah, there must be something. I mean, obviously the passing in the 2 minutes is very important, so I don't know. But he also, like, he's not a bad runner. He's not great. Like, he doesn't seem super athletic.
Yeah.
It just feels,
aside from that, he's not bad.
I think he's trusted with the ball, though. Like, he seems to have good ball security.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever fumbled five carries or whatever he's had. And the other thing I'd throw out there, there are guys, and with the next two that we'll talk about here, is when you follow the team like me, and I'm a genius, I know exactly who to follow, I listen to everything, so my opinion is very valued.
Wow.
But when you listen to a bunch of different guys, beat reporters, like Andy Herman, he says a lot of positive things. He's a blogger boy. I've said a million times, like, how he's like, oh, Kalen Hill's looking so good, Matt LaFleur has to make a package on this offense for him. And then he was cut, you know, a year later. Mike Spofford tweeted, who works for Packers.com, tweeted, Lloyd is just a different back, man. And that dude, Spofford, has like zero personality. He is boring as hell. I couldn't tell you a take he's had before this. So to see him say that is something. Wes Hodquitz spoke very highly of him as well, and because Lloyd was finally practicing again this week, and he just has a different gear. And especially, like, these guys have seen Aaron Jones, who's a really, really good running back. And, like, Wes was saying, he's just a different player out there. He says, Wes said, I haven't looked forward to watching someone in preseason more than I have for Marshawn Lloyd this year.
Oh.
So, again, he's a guy who's super fast, fumbling issues, injury issues, obviously. But if he can be healthy, I mean, again, we just talked to fucking, what, six running backs here, and we're probably going to keep three. So we'll see what happens. But either way, pretty, I don't know. There's things to look at here that is fun. And like I was talking to you, Billy, earlier this week, entertaining preseason comes down to having talented running backs. Because usually you're just fucking running the ball more than you're passing, it seems like. And when you have plotters like fucking Dexter Williams, Craig Lumpkin, or whoever else, it's like, oh, it's, oh, 2 yard carry.
Deshaun Wynn.
It's a real throwback. Ooh. But with these guys, I think, you know, preseason games are a little bit more fun.
I think it is telling that Spofford and Hodquitz both have talked up Lloyd a little bit, because and this is just my opinion, I'll go to Packers.com just to read what Spofford and Hodquitz have to say, because I feel like it's factual. They'll tell me who did well, and they'll tell me who played poorly. Versus, you know, like you were saying, the beat writers, some of the blogger boys, whatever. Seems like they're trying to get clicks, and what sells positivity and getting people excited about the upcoming season. So, of course, you know, so-and-so is looking great.
They do see everything through those rose-colored glasses. That's like that. I remember, like, I don't know, 5-10 years ago, just like being excited about training camp, like really starting to pay attention to it. And like, it's August and I'm like, we're going to fucking win the Super Bowl. And then it's like, you get to the end of the training, and they're like, half the guys are cut. You're like, oh, you guys weren't good.
Or you think
what the hell's going on?
Oh my God, we cut this guy. He's never going to make it to the practice squad and blah, blah, blah. And then he makes it to the practice squad and we cut him 3 weeks later and nobody signs him.
Well, it's like that, that wide receiver we signed from the Niners. Is it Naylor or something, I believe?
Naylor.
Yeah, he was getting talked up at their training camp like he's a god. Like Kittle was saying how he's just a different animal. All the beat reporters are like, oh my God, he's great. And then they cut him. He didn't even make it to final cuts, which was interesting. So, and I don't know, you're talking about who to trust. It's like, number one for me, it's always the beat reporters. It's like, if you're more of an asshole, I almost believe you a little bit more, because if you're saying something good about someone, I'm like, this guy never is positive about anything. And then after that, it's like
Rodney.
And then it's like,
yep,
Wes and Spofford, they work for the team. I don't think they're ever going to be overly critical, so they're kind of in a weird spot. And then the blogger boys, that's almost more like entertainment, besides Justice Mosqueda, who I think is very, very good, or he has great opinions and he's very good at speaking out his thoughts. And then you have, like, I don't know, like fucking Ross Uglum. I've soured on him recently because he can never be wrong about anything. Andy Herman, he's fine, but it's like the extra words he throws, in an incredible sack from LVN, and like, I'm sure if you saw the play, it's like, it's a fucking practice, you know? So I don't know, whatever. I talked too much about that. Next,
what are your thoughts on Rodney?
Rodney Packers notes?
Yes.
I don't follow him. He's
what?
I used to love
my favorite
him.
Follow.
I used to follow him. He's a little too dark. It got to the point where it's like, do you like anyone on this team? Because he's like 9-1 for like negative to positive, it feels like.
I feel like he's better now, or maybe I'm just used to how negative he is, but anytime I see him be positive, I'm like, oh, I gotta start paying attention to this guy. Because you're like, he is so negative, just like his zero, like his neutral line is like a blogger's, like, in the dumps. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So his, when you see him get a little bit excited, and he doesn't have horrible takes.
His
delivery sucks on Twitter, but like his takes aren't that bad.
He would make the same jokes over and over again, and I think that's what pissed me off. One of the things I think that I soured on him on too was like after we knew Ted had mental things going on, which eventually took his life, like he was still making fun of Ted Thompson, like being asleep at the wheel at the end. I think that might have been something that rubbed me the wrong way too, because I think he made that joke over and over and over again. I'm like, okay, fuck,
that's fair.
I don't need this.
Yeah, I mean, some of his takes are horrible, but I just like when you filter through it a little bit, he does pat himself on the back a lot.
Yes.
Too. Like,
yeah,
he'll go back and be like, I said this 3 years ago. It's like, all right. Dude,
that nothing.
You said a lot of stuff 3 years ago.
Nothing kills me more. Like, that's why Ross Uglum I haven't liked as much. I mean, I'll still watch some of his shit here and there, especially during the draft. Fucking Ken Ingles, cap guru guy.
Yep.
He tweeted something like very neutral about like, oh, Zach Tom, that contract's going to be done pretty soon. And it was like a day before training camp started. The next day, you know, the day before training camp started, Zach Tom signs his extension. And then Ken like quote tweets his tweet from the previous day. It's like, I guess I was right. It's like, no fucking shit. Like, he takes victory laps for the smallest little things that are very, very obvious to anyone paying attention, and he won't accept when he's wrong on things. I hate when you gloat when you're right, and then you don't accept it when you're wrong.
Winner.
Me, however, I'm a perfect human, and I always admit my...
Can attest.
Yes.
You admit to your many shortfalls is what I'm hearing?
Yes, which are none. The last guy to talk about for... stock up, unless you guys have more. Kalen King, we just went on a bit of a rant there, we as in me, but with the beat reporters. So this is what Silverstein said, and I was kind of pissed. I listened to Blue 58 with John Meerdink, and he brought this up as well, but I wrote this down beforehand, so I'm not stealing from him. Tom Silverstein on the Packers news podcast, who again usually doesn't make statements like this, said, I was really impressed with Kalen King. I just think he's had a great camp, and it's come out of nowhere for a seventh-round pick from a year ago to be playing slot corner, which isn't an easy position. He's physical and active in the run game. He broke up two passes in the end zone, tackled a guy short of a first down on a third-down play. I wonder if he keeps playing well, whether they'll just put him on the field more. And he's kind of been a guy who, you know, we're seeing these 53-man roster predictions who's kind of on the edge there. I think a lot of guys are having him as the last corner to make the team. But to, again, see a guy like Silverstein, who's a curmudgeon, usually doesn't make statements like this, to be saying that, you know, a guy who is kind of a bubble guy, that they're going to have to put him on the field. That is very, very interesting to me, especially with Bullard being up and down playing at the slot, to see that Kalen King showing up. Very, very good news for training camp.
And also, like, if, like, Bullard is your competition for the slot spot, it does... I feel like I've given Bullard a really hard time, but, like...
You loved him when we drafted him. I mean, I did, too.
I did. He felt good. He's aggressive. Like, there's things that are, like, that I enjoy about him, but when you watch him in coverage, it's like, fuck.
Yeah.
Like, I put him on a tight end and have him, like, mug a tight end. I feel like that's... that's like the best position for him right now. And I'm not saying it can't change, but like, man, deep safety is not it. You know, covering slots, gosh, it just doesn't seem to be there. I don't know. So Kalen King, obviously, like, if that's his competition, that does feel better. So
drafting these Georgia guys too, it's like, why do the Eagles get all the good ones and then we get like the Eric Stokes? And obviously, I mean, he can turn it around. Yeah. But it's I don't know.
All the ones that fall to the Eagles have character concerns.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. Like, Eric Stokes was a very, very nice boy. He just wasn't very good at football.
Bunch of dirt bags over there in Philly. Fits the city.
Yeah. Well, I guess we got Brenton Cox. Did he go to...
Not a dirt bag.
Did he go to Georgia? Was that one of the two schools? It was
Florida.
Florida
and
Georgia.
He got cut from Florida.
I think he got kicked off of both because it was two SEC schools. I don't remember if it... if it was
classic SEC football.
Yeah.
Was it? I'll look it up.
Okay, perfect. But again, I mean, Billy, you have something on Kalen King?
Not about Kalen King. I wanted to talk about another corner, if I may.
Okay, I'll allow it.
Bo Melton. I remember when we talked on the podcast about him switching from wide receiver to corner, and I feel like we all kind of just chuckled and said, oh, well, that just means you're not long for your time in Green Bay if you're making a position switch. I mean, everything that I've seen during training camp is that he looks like a corner, and then I watched him during the preseason game. Like, he had some plays. He was physical against blockers. He came up in run support. And just looking at him in his backpedal and breaking on the ball, like, it appears that he knows what he's doing and looks comfortable out there. And the more that I've seen from the people covering the team, it appears that he's a lock to make it.
It does feel that way. Again, with the coaching staff, you don't know, because they obviously, if it was up to them, Bo would be on the team. Maybe he's kind of like Rich Bisaccia's, I get to pick one special teams guy, and we're going to go with Bo this year. He did, he was out of his like uniform after the first half, so he wasn't even suited up for the second half, so that's usually a good sign, too, right, that they think he's important. Todd, did you figure out Brenton Cox?
Yep. Began his collegiate career at Georgia.
Okay, so once again, I was right. Like,
yeah. Made his first career start in the 2019 Sugar Bowl, making 6 tackles, and it was downhill from there.
And it takes a lot to get kicked off of Georgia. They have a lot of problems with that program.
Imagine you have 6 tackles as a true freshman, not a redshirt
in a bowl game.
Freshman in a bowl game, yeah. And then they're like, "You got to get off the team."
And I don't want to say this. We're in Georgia. Like, you can either get drunk.
Either that, or it was the head coach saying, "I'm going to kick this 5-star outside linebacker off the team to make a statement because I know that I've got 3 more 5-star outside linebackers right behind him."
Well, then he went to Florida and also got kicked off Florida. So yeah. Maybe Britain was the problem.
With that, we will have a quick commercial break.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
All right, we are back with the down stocks. First thing I've listed, backup centers. Ugh. A guy we've talked up a bit based off of his highlight center tape out of Duke, Jacob Monk. I think we're starting to realize a little bit more why he didn't get the call against the Eagles after Elton got hurt there. He was called for... well, 3 holds initially. One of them got called back or were blamed on someone else. The second one was pretty bullshit, I thought. But he also had a terrible sack that he let up when he was playing right guard. That was pretty bad. He's going from, you know, beginning training camp, where is he competing to be the backup center, to, God, is this guy on the roster bubble? Probably not. But the way he's looked, it's just not very, very good. I mean, it's to the point where I wouldn't be shocked. I think on the outside, we're looking pretty good again with Morgan and Belton and Walker and, Zach Tom, but come after cutdowns, maybe we claim an interior offensive lineman from a different team just cause Sean Ryan hasn't been great at center either. So I wouldn't be surprised if something happens there. And again, like I'm saying here, the backup center, Sean Ryan didn't have a great day either, especially playing center. It's, again, something we kind of hinted at before, but Elton might, you know, holding out during, like, OTAs and coming back for training camp with his back after his back injury healed up. I mean, maybe he is just back next year because we don't want to do the Josh Myers experiment again and have to start a rookie right off the bat, and because I don't think either of these guys are probably ready to be a center next year or right now.
It is wild. Like, the center position used to be such a, like...
plug and play.
Well, not even... yeah, it was just, like, so consistent.
Just
like,
we always just had good... never worried about it.
Never worried about it. And now it's, like... and And I do wonder too, how close were we to drafting Creed Humphreys?
Yeah.
Where was he on the board? Because that would have been, we'd just been right back where we always were.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like even if you look back, the Jeff Saturday year, that was the end of the year. You could tell.
Well, that was going to be his last year, but you say that, but it's we had a hole at center. We signed Jeff Saturday, which was shocking at the time because we never signed free agents right. that start. And then he was benched for Evan Dedrick Smith, who ended up being a pretty solid center for us for a few years.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. It's a bummer to go through, especially at a position where, a guy that touches the ball every play, you just don't want those guys to be liabilities. Granted, if there's one, it's center over quarterback, but still, it's just it's a bummer to see that with the high snaps and that can really change a game, especially when you get to late in the season. Just those little tiny plays and not being crisp. We saw that with Elton at center, coming in rusty in those high snaps. Those matter. And so it'd be nice to see somebody step up other than, I think Elton will be fine, but it's just that interior depth does make me a little bit worried because someone's getting hurt. It's going to happen.
I'm not an offensive line play expert by any means, but when I notice dudes getting beat, especially on the interior, you're having a bad day. I don't even know who this Jay Toofili dude is, but he had a sack and a half. He had the safety. It's we're making this doofus look like an all-pro, and I've literally never heard of him. And maybe he makes a team for the Jets and has a really great year. But, I don't know how much of his performance was on Monk, but what I think might be even worse is whoever was rotating in during training camp behind Monk at third center. He's inconsistent. Like you were saying, Todd, with snaps, they're high, they're low, they're wide, whatever. It just throws the complete timing of the playoff. And it seems like he doesn't even have any trust from the coaching staff to get any meaningful snaps in a preseason game.
I'd imagine too, that snap being a little bit wild is really going to throw off a quarterback, especially in the pros where you have to see those split seconds matter. Hey, if that safety bails last second, or if he comes down, if you see him crash down, that matters with what you're going to do with the ball. And so just the consistency seems super crucial for especially RPOs and stuff like that. So
I'm a Wisconsin college football fan, unfortunately, the last few years. And last year, their center did not get any zip on the ball back to the quarterback. The ball would just take so long, it almost float there. And
I've
the running back would want to step up and get the ball kind of in stride. And it just felt like every single time he'd get a handoff out of shotgun, he's almost standing, waiting there for it. And it just, the offensive line is pushing up front, and it's just the timing between the quarterback and running back was just all screwed up. It was so frustrating to watch.
That's why they invented the pistol.
To shoot people. And hey, again, they're flyers, not gunners. Moving on, the next stock down, the non-golden receivers. Todd, do you know what I'm talking about?
We're calling them flyers.
Yeah, Rich still corrects them in pressers when they say gunners. He says flyers. I don't know, because he's curbing gun violence. I have no idea. The non-golden receivers, stock down. I mean, again, Dobbs, first play of the game, drop.
Jaden, an easy catch too.
Jaden Reed, boot, Wicks, hurt, Malik Heath, drop, McCole Hardman. Oh fuck, I forgot about him until I literally read his name. He was a guy too. I think we were kind of assuming, just reading tweets, reading articles, that he's been playing a lot with the first team, making a lot of catches, yada yada. He's been getting a lot of snaps with special teams. And the argument is that he's trying to make the team. He wants to show coach what he can do. But fielding the ball at the five, the muff punt, the drop he had on offense too. I mean, it sounds like he was pretty pissed at himself after the game, rightfully so. But fuck, man. We talked about it earlier. Maybe we have to go tight end heavy. I mean, shit. 12 personnel, 21 personnel. I mean, maybe we don't really have to have... Maybe it's just Matthew Golden out there. I mean, again, obviously, being facetious there, but after the way last season went, to start with the first team offense doing this, and obviously, I mean, we didn't even talk about how good Matthew Golden looked, but having the one catch and then the pass interference penalty, huge. I mean, the two first downs that I believe our first team offense had was off of him, so that's great. But outside of that, it's like, you know, we talked about you get what you emphasize on defense previously with like the whole ball king thing and forcing turnovers, which didn't happen in this game. What in the fuck does wide receiver coach Ryan Mahaffey emphasize? Because there's one thing I would emphasize with this group. I'll let you guess on what that is, but I don't think he's doing it. And it's just, I hope they can turn it around. If not, it's like, I want him to lose his job. I want to be better at wide receiver this year.
Well, I don't think he's emphasizing staying healthy, because we don't have healthy receivers either, to be fair.
Yeah.
I mentioned this to you on Monday, Spencer. The most frustrating part from the wide receivers is it came from a bunch of dudes that we expect to make the team and play significant roles, or at minimum be competing to make the team in the case of Mecole Hardman. Like, if it was Will Shepard that had a couple of drops, fine, whatever. Right. I don't care. I'm not, if he makes the practice squad, that's the ceiling for him this year. But when it's Romeo Doubs, who's supposed to have the surest hands on the team, and then Wicks and Reed are hurt, and then you have Malik Heath, who's trying to fight for a roster spot, he drops one. It's like, who am I supposed to feel excited about right now other than Matthew Golden?
That is the guy. Like, when he was on the field, didn't he catch like one nice little slant?
Yes.
For turned seven into a first yards down or something.
And then who was on him? Who's the Sauce Gardner was on him? Yep. And then he got DPI. It was like, and he was right there too to catch that one too. So like, I don't know. It's, but going back to the wideouts, I mean, it's it's gross. It sucks. Like, they're never going to be able to catch the ball.
Yeah.
None of them can catch.
We're definitely not overanalyzing two series of a piece of the game. It's
so disappointing though to watch Romeo drop two.
Yes.
It's like, dude, like
one.
Cuz to me that's like, they're just, well, he dropped. Well,
the one was, might have been a defensive play by Sauce, but he had it in his hands, and
sure.
I think you still got to catch that.
It's a catch that as a professional I would hope you make the majority of the time.
The problem is, it's like they're these concentration catches. Like, it's not that they can't catch, it's that like
they can't concentrate in their own
head. But like, that's the frustrating thing. It's like, get it together, guys. Like, what's, I don't know what the problem is, but like, it's been 2 years, figure it out.
Moving on, the next stock down is the Isaiah linebackers. Isaiah McDuffie, he didn't look great. I tweeted this out there. His helmet looked really round.
I don't know.
Maybe,
like a bobblehead? Like Romeo's? Romeo's kind of, very round.
But it just looked
very huge.
It looked really round to me. Like, it was bigger than normal and
like too
round.
Big for his head?
Right. Kind of like that. I didn't remember feeling that way previously about his helmet, and I have an opinion on everyone's helmet. He got beat in like the pass game again. That's kind of what always happens. But again, the Isaiah linebackers, Isaiah Simmons did not look good. It was very interesting that he lined up as a gunner multiple times.
A gunner?
Yeah, I'm not going to bend the knee to, yeah. But he lined up as a gunner. As a linebacker, Justice Mosqueda tweeted this out there, I believe, how last year in the NFL, it's something like 0.02% of linebackers lined up as a gunner last year, or snaps at gunner were linebacker. So it just does not happen. But when you have a, you know, whatever the fuck he is, 6'4", 6'5", 4'3".
Fastest linebacker ever.
Fastest linebacker ever. It just makes sense. However, what doesn't make sense is that he doesn't know how to pass cover, apparently. That one clip that went viral was pretty bad. Justice Mosqueda was trying to bail him out a bit, where how you can get tricked on that with turning your head, maybe. I don't know, but that's always been the thing with Isaiah Simmons. It's the reason why, what, he was a top 10 pick and he's bounced around this league, is he has all the traits, but he doesn't have, you know, that mentality, or, you know, he doesn't seem to catch on to football very well.
he looks good when he's in shorts and a t-shirt during OTAs, and then when the pads come on and he's got to go play against another team, doesn't look so great.
Yes. So
that is a problem in the pros.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens at inside linebacker. Again, it's like what, and with that, I mean, someone who we probably should have had, I think I just wanted to talk about him here, but again, Hopper, I keep forgetting his name, Tyron, who he was very bad last year as a rookie, barely got on the field. He was the one that we got with the Rasul Douglas trade, but he might just be moving up the depth chart just because Simmons isn't very good. Isaiah McDuffie is kind of meh.
Haven't people been saying good things about him in camp, though?
Who?
Hopper.
Yeah, I'm saying good. He's good. He's been looking good, yes. Because he gets his hand on a lot of balls. Well. Yeah, and he's a lot more active in the run game than I think people were expecting, too. So I think it's funny because this offseason, with re-signing McDuffie, bringing in Simmons, it seemed like they were trying to move away from Tyron, and now he's above the depth chart, it feels like, from those guys right now. So I don't know how that'll shake out at the back end there. There's Christian Welch still sitting out there, too. So,
ooh, special teams all-star.
Yeah. You see he ran that one down. They, like, I forget the terminology, but they doubled up on the gunners. So he had to, like, run straight down the field, and he's the one that made the tackle on that one punt. Yeah. That was pretty fucking cool to see.
It was, like, one of the early punts in the game, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. That's the thing, too, with, like, Isaiah Simmons and him, because it probably comes down to those two. It's like, well, do you want the potential of Simmons, or do you want a more well-rounded, but now a getting older linebacker, and Welch, who's in his, like, sixth year, he wasn't fast to begin with, and I don't know if he could really play defense all that well, but he is more of a special teams. It's like, what special teams guy do you want to go with? So
we got to give Rich all the guys. Rich gets every player that he wants.
Mm-hmm.
So we can have a, you know, lower half of the league special teams.
He is the assistant head coach, so I hope he has so much pull because he's shown so much as a special teams coordinator for this team.
Is he the highest paid coordinator in the league?
I don't think he is anymore.
But he's up there.
Do you see who the special teams coordinator was for the Jets?
No.
Former Packer?
I feel like I'm going to know this when you say it.
Chris Banjo.
That's right.
What?
Yep. He played safety, special teams player. He was a special teams ace in the league for a while. I think he played a lot for the Saints and the Cardinals after we moved on from him. So
yeah, Saints sounds familiar.
Again, pretty cool. I mean, look at that. Our special teams coaches were so bad, we could have just had one of our players be a better coordinator than some of the guys that we brought in.
That's true. Yeah, we could probably do it.
I mean, yeah. Chris Skizzy is a special teams coordinator, isn't he?
No. Chris Skizzy was the trainer that we fired.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's another former player.
We talked about this before. Chris Skizzy was the former trainer. Darren Rizzi is the special teams coordinator.
Okay. That's where I got confused.
Yeah. Ugh, my fucking stupid brain. Other news and notes. Kicker Mark McName, whatever the fuck, the tall Irish kid from Ireland, because he's Irish. He finally got to Green Bay.
Is he from Scotland?
Is he a redhead?
Hold on. Oh, he is. Yep, nope. He is still Irish. Yeah. So we signed him. It took him 2 weeks to get his visa stuff figured out. But he flew into Green Bay at 11 p.m. the day before the game, which is pretty funny. And then he came in and he handled all the kickoffs, and he did pretty well too. Because if you remember, they changed the kickoff rules where it still has to land in that area, and now there's more of a penalty. I think it goes out to the 35 if you don't make it in there. And he didn't have any bad kicks, so that's a good start there. Pretty cool journey with him, too, how he's quit his job, like, the last year or two just to kick footballs. And he was, like, in the Canadian Football League, got cut. He went to the NFL Combine, didn't get any calls for a while, and then out of nowhere, the Packers called him, and now he's been, you know, figuring out his visa shit, got here. And the ball just, watching the clips, like, the ball does make a weird sound off his foot. Like, he is a thick muscular kicker, and he pounds that ball. So I wonder if he actually turns into something here. But I assume he's the international whatever player, so he's basically a freebie on the roster.
Oh,
so
he's the free guy.
Stock up for him then.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't really be down because he, you know, he's lucky to be in the league.
We're just talking about him after we talked about a bunch of dudes that were stocked down. Yeah.
Are you down on Danny Whelan?
No, he was great.
Whelan and Dillon?
No, fuck no, he was great.
Well, if you're up on his backup.
He's a kicker, not a punter.
I said this during the game about Whelan. If we had a bottom 10 offense in the league, Whelan would be an all-pro punter.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. Because, again, this week he was just fucking pounding them, too.
Hell yeah. Brandon McManus, stock up.
Other news, we did sign Corey Ballantyne. We talked about this a little bit earlier this offseason, too, how it would have been nice to just keep him around because he's a nice little guaranteed as a fifth or sixth corner. He's been running with a lot of the starting special teams units, so he might have a good shot of making this team. Again, it's maybe coming down to being a little bit more interesting than we initially thought at the back end of the cornerback room with Bo Melton, Corey Ballantyne, and Kalen King now. So just something to monitor, but I feel a little bit better about that depth. If nothing else, one of those guys ending up on the practice squad, maybe having to play some defensive snaps would be better than whoever the fuck, Dunn, or whoever these guys are, having to play a little bit more. And then I just wrote down Carl Brooks and Bullard. Bullard, we talked about him a little bit, but Carl Brooks has been about the... He's a guy I've been high on since, you know, we drafted him. He was really good his rookie year, but he hasn't really developed much, and I haven't read much of anything about him during training camp here, so I don't think you guys have anything to say about him, but hey, if you have anything to say now...
Kick block extraordinaire.
Yep, just
Carl Brooks.
Just the one fingy, that's all he needs.
Again, Rich is going to keep him.
Yeah, I mean, I would be shocked if he actually got cut, but you know, I even forgot to bring up his name when we were talking about the rotation of edge guys that we have.
I like Carl Brooks. I feel like he's fun when he's out there. He looks like he's like high effort. But yeah, I don't know. Haven't heard anything about him really in the Twitter sphere.
Last thing to talk about. God, we went longer than I thought we would. I thought this would be a quick podcast, but no.
No such thing.
Mark Murphy has a new gig. Again, you know, didn't want to talk about him, but when news happens, I've got to talk to it. I would be letting the fans down if I didn't, and there are millions of them. So yeah, great news today. Former Packers president / CEO Mark Murphy taking a new role with the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay Athletics. According to the release from the university, Murphy accepted a role as the Phoenix's inaugural executive in residence. Whatever the fuck that means. Now,
Super straightforward.
I mean, it makes sense him taking some type of job like this. As most probably remember, he was the AD at Northwestern before taking the job with the Packers. However, if you just rewind to last year in November, something that we talked about was this news clipping. So I'm just reading this. This is from the Packers release, which I found on the internet again. The Green Bay Packers, again, this is November 14th, 27th, one of those dates, something like that, middle of November. The Green Bay Packers and UWGB announced today that the Packers are making a leading gift to establish and endow the, quote, Mark Murphy Director of Athletics position at the university. The gift of $250,000 is being made by the Packers in honor of the organization's longtime president and CEO as he approaches retirement in July after 17 seasons. UWGB Director of Athletics Josh Moon will become the first Mark Murphy Endowed Director of Athletics effective immediately. So, again, if I'm crazy here, let me know. But
you are, just maybe not for this reason.
A year ago, we gave this university, the Packers, gave this university $250,000, and they created a position named after Mark Murphy. Fast forward 8 months later, whatever, and Mark Murphy joins that university in some inaugural executive in residence position. How much money is he getting paid? And did one thing lead to another? Because to me,
sounds like a kickback to me.
it is
just greasing the wheels a little bit. And again,
this is the guy who I forgot the law firm or whatever that he worked with. But when the Packers in 2007 were hiring a new president, they hired a search firm, and they came up with Mark Murphy's name. He gets hired to be the Packers' next president. Well, Mark Murphy, when the Packers have to start their search for the next president, even though we had Ed Policy, who had been here for 10 plus years waiting in the wings to be the next president, we give this search firm another probably $1 million to just tell us the obvious choice is the obvious choice. A little kickback there again. And I'm just like, is no one else seeing this? Like, Mark, you can go off and do your things or whatever. But it's like, do the Packers have to get involved to, one, give up that much money, and, two, make a position with his name, which he didn't, like, if he, I don't know how I would view it, but if he got hired on to the position named after him, I might be more fine with it, because it's like, who else would be better for that role than Mark Murphy for the Mark Murphy Endowed Director of Athletics position? But isn't this a little fishy?
Oh, absolutely. Like, it I don't even understand the so-called relationship, long-standing relationship between UW Green Bay and the Packers.
It's also in Green
Bay.
That
is weird.
UW Green Bay doesn't even have a football team that I'm aware of. So where's this relationship? It's not like the Packers are letting UW Green Bay use their facilities or anything.
Well, don't you?
Yeah, what is the relationship?
Don't you guys remember that the Packers would always during training camp stay at the dorms at? Wait, no, that's right. That was St. Norbert.
That was St. Norbert.
That was the joke. But it's like, so even they're not even the college that they have history with nearby.
And then, so this $250,000 that the Packers donate to put Mark Murphy's name on this position. It's like, what's happening to this money? Like, is this paying this dude's salary for a year or something? And then
next, the Packers make a donation to the golf course Mark Murphy bought.
Right. Like,
for their longstanding cooperation.
A year before Mark Murphy bought the golf course.
It's not like they put this money towards an athletic scholarship or something. Right. They named it after, you know, some dude that's already getting paid six figures to be the AD at this Division III school.
Yeah. Todd?
I like it. I like it. I think it was crafty. I think no one's going to pick up
Mark
on it.
Mark thought that everybody would forget about what happened 8 months ago.
I think, no one's going to pick up on this. I think everyone's probably like, oh, yeah, I do remember, you know, UWGB being a big part of Packers history. And
if you say so, Green Bay Packers press release.
I like how you said it. I didn't even think of it, but the way you're saying it's crafty. It's like Mark Murphy, knowing him, like if you remember last year, he had his Mark Murphy Day 2 where the fucking coin they flipped at the beginning of the game had his face on it. They had his whole ceremony at halftime. Yep. He was on the program for the game and all that shit. And now I'm thinking, like, even this embezzling, whatever the fuck this is, he couldn't do it without, like, getting more, like, they could have donated this money or something and not had a big press release and shit last year, but it's like he couldn't not have the position. Like, even if you give them the money, sure, but it's like you had to make the Mark Murphy.
Right.
Have you ever heard of a position with a person's name in it, a job with a person's name in it? Like,
it's hiding in plain sight.
Honestly, it sounds like naming a football field after dude, only they paid to do it. Like, hey, I'm going to pay you $250,000 to rename the actual turf at Lambeau Field Billy and Todd Ceremonial Honorary Field at Lambeau Field.
It just feels like if you pressed Mark Murphy about it, if you went up to him and were like, Mark, what the fuck is this $250,000 that you gave UWGB that was obviously just a backdoor deal for you to finagle your way? He'd be like, who told you that? When it was like the most obvious thing ever, because it's like he got pissed off at Jason Wilde at the presser after he changed the structure and they hired Brian Gutekunst, because Wilde was like, okay, what makes you qualified to make football decisions? You know, you're giving yourself that responsibility now. And he was like taken aback by it. It's like, how do you not know you're going to be asked that question, and how are you offended by it when it's so obvious in here? Like, I wouldn't be shocked if he was like, wait, I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have made a position.
You know what I think his job is at UW Green Bay? I think he's just going to make more. He's going to make more back room deals. You know,
yeah, between they want in on the deals.
He's going to help broker deals between UW Green Bay and businesses for like sponsorships or whatever. And he's just going to take a little bit of money off the top. Like
he's like, oh, hey, you guys have any contracts with the city that we can trim down? Right.
Hey,
I'm really good at that.
Let's buy this lot nearby the campus and make Phoenix Town.
I'm pretty sure
he just takes the same layout.
I'm pretty sure UW Green Bay actually talked about his work with Titletown in the press release. It's
I think like, they did. They said something about like what isn't it like Innovation City or something? It's like another
what
thing.
What does that he expect you to do on your campus?
I'm imagining him like going to a meeting with like the school. And they're like, all right,
chancellor and the dean.
I got this idea for this plot of land. And then he literally takes out the blueprints from like Titletown. And he's like, let's just make it a little smaller.
And he taped the UWGB logo right over the top of the G for the Packers.
He just scribbled it out with Sharpie.
And then he just looks up looking for approval with the gap in his teeth.
This is just a concept.
Also, if you're, maybe I'm the idiot in this situation, but like you're hiring, like let's say he is going to help out with like that Innovation City or whatever the heck it's called. It's like, what did Mark Murphy do? He just allowed people to go spend money to build Titletown District. Like he didn't have, they were like, Mark, what are we going to do? And he's like, oh, sledding hills and hotels. Like he didn't
ask Ed.
It was just,
yeah, he was like, talk to someone else. I'll put someone else in charge of it.
It was just, hey, let's go buy that Kmart plot and somebody else can figure out what they want to do with it.
Yeah. And it was like, oh, it's Mark Murphy. He did it all. Like he's just like at the top taking credit the whole time.
Oh, that was good. That was a good laugh. I haven't laughed like that in a while. Like literally just imagining him with bloop, like laying
like
him out.
Out of his back pocket.
He would probably show up with like a hard hat on or something.
Yeah. All right, you guys ready to break ground? They're like, Mark, we don't know what we're doing yet. No.
We don't have the money for this.
All right. I don't know how long that went, but I think that was a good enough episode. We'll be back next week. Oh, I haven't done this in a couple of weeks. If you could please leave a review on Spotify or Apple. Apple would be cool. I don't think we've had one on there in quite a while. Just leave a review. Say whatever. Say we're great. Say we're bad. I don't care. But do 5 stars. If you want a free koozie, take a screenshot of it. Email it to us at pppodcast@gmail.com or DM us on Twitter. Spotify, you can comment. Oh, fuck. We had a comment last week, too. I forgot the guy's name. If you're listening, you know I'm talking about you. He said, like, Hidden Gem or something. Always a good listen, something like that. Yeah, so there you go. You can comment on each episode, too. Spotify, too, now, a neat thing. They've made their own chapters. So I just upload the episode, and they like make 10-minute long chapters, like the AI, whatever they have, knows what we're talking about. And it gives you timestamps for like the shit. So you could look at that too. I don't know why you would. I'm sure you listen to the whole thing anyways. So
that's concerning.
Do you want me to read what the comment was?
Yeah, yeah, you can read it.
It was from CNiche290. Quietly an awesome Packers pod. All reliable.
There you go. I like old reliable more than quietly because we're obviously movers and shakers in the industry, but I'll accept.
Yeah, making moves. It's us and Mark making an impact.
Showing up with
it's a little concerning. Blueprints. It's a little concerning to me that AI knows what we're talking about because I don't think we know what we're talking about.
Well, it didn't correct itself last week when I said I was wrong. I accidentally said Russ Ball. Russ Ball is brought on as new president. It didn't correct it to Ed Policy, so it didn't know to do that when the rest of the conversation was that I had to manually go in and change it, which Spotify made pretty easy to do. So whatever. Good job, Spotify, on that. Your Spotify's only known for great things, especially recently.
Wait, did something bad
happen? I read something that I haven't updated my Spotify, but now you have to like scan your ID if you want to. Yeah. right, if you want to use it. So why do you need this, Spotify?
Like my driver's license?
Yes, yes. Nothing bad can come from this. You definitely take all my information. You have none of the other stuff.
What kind of podcasts are on Spotify that they need to have this?
All of them. Caller Daddy. They got to be over 18 to listen to that one.
So inappropriate.
Mm-hmm. One can only assume.
Okay, I'll just have the G-rated version then.
Okay, with that,
no swears.
Okay, okay. With that, you guys got anything else? Anything important? Training camp, players, people, things, places, food.
When do we play on Saturday? Is it a night game?
I didn't know what day we played.
I think it's
Saturday at noon against the Colts at the Colts.
Cool. There you go, Anthony Richardson. We don't have to talk about him. I don't even know if he's back practicing again with the. Here it is, pinky finger.
It does not matter if he's practicing or not.
Yeah, that's true. With that, AJ Dillon, take us out.
To anybody on Twitter or whatever, you can't do what we're doing. Just enjoy, just watch. Anywhere I quit my job. Yeah, 'cause it just won't pay. I worked all year, I worked all month. Then they took my money.
It's just like it's people on horses going over stuff, or is that different? Yeah, is that equestrian? Like, what's the difference?
That too, probably cool walking horses.
Or you're roping stuff.
Watch this horse trot. Like, that's what they do.
I just don't know what they do, to be honest.
Rodeo was like riding big bulls with big horns.
But isn't that
and
bull riding? That's bull riding.
Off. I thought that was a rodeo.
See, they might have done that.
Oh, I don't know.
They
might thought it was different.
They might have done that too, but it was a small county. It was a Douglas County one. So I don't remember.
And they don't
have
people that dumb to do that.
If it's people riding bulls, I'm for sure in.
Love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Lux Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Lux Cafe.